Welcome back to this month's episode of Hours to Protect. Hours to Protect is funded by Commission Na Mban with the television licence fee and as a partnership between Midwest Radio and the Independent Broadcasters of Ireland. On this month's episode of Hours to Protect, we will speak to the BT Young Scientist winners from Ballinrobe Community School, and they are Emily Butler, Emma Sweeney and Luke Malloy. They were presented with the first place Senior Group Biological and Ecological Sciences Category Award. They were also presented with another award for their hard work concerning the feeding habits of fledgling swifts in correlation to weather conditions. They spoke with us on their findings and their hard work and their experiences throughout the project. We will also be joined by Linda Huxley of Swift Conservation Mayo. Linda actually approached Ballinrobe Community School a number of years ago to get involved in this project. We will hear what she has to say on that. We will also be joined by a number of students from Scoil Náisiúnta Na Chorcaíoch, who will tell us about their hard work and what they are doing to protect our beautiful coastlines. Owen Warner, the naturalist and wildlife documentary presenter, will also join us to share his thoughts on conservation and offer some advice to young people who are working hard on behalf of our beautiful coasts. First off, I would like to welcome Emily Butler, Emma Sweeney and Luke Malloy from Ballinrobe Community School. Guys, how are you doing? And thanks very much for being with us. Who can tell me a little bit about the project itself? I know it's all about the common swift. So do you want to give me a breakdown on what the project was and how you got into it?
So our project was about the common swift. So they're an endangered species of bird, and we wanted to explore more into different aspects of their life. So we looked into how much they feed and all of their little living habits. So we hope that more people will get to know about these birds as they're endangered, and we want them to be able to have their housing and have places to live so they can repopulate and survive.
Can you tell me how you came up with this idea to study this project and how you conducted your study?
We were approached by Linda Huxley from Swift Conservation Ireland, and she asked our teacher, Barry Rourke, if he wanted to have students help with the research on the swifts. So we started doing the research for them on like watching the videos and watching what was happening. But then our teacher asked us if we wanted to do BT Young Scientist. So that's when we decided to further our project and compare their habits to all of the meteorological data and all the weather and stuff like that.
Altogether, we watched 2,500 hours of footage. So if we were to put that in terms of how long it took us, it would be the equivalent of watching the 10 seasons of Friends 32 times over, nonstop.
That's no small feat either, really, when you think about it, is it?
No, it's not at all.
And was it just the three of you, or was there more people to help out with that?
There was a few more people. We did have a group going in the school, so it helped us out a lot.
So I know you guys said swifts live on the wing. So if we are faced with storms, we're faced with weather changes due to climate change, how is that going to impact the life of the swift?
What we looked at essentially was the weather patterns over the course of their feeding. So we looked at the overall temperature. And what we found was that when the temperature increases, they feed more. So with climate change and Ireland's temperature on the rise, we were actually hoping that this might have a positive effect on these guys, because if the temperature's up and they feed more when it's up, then that could mean that there's more food for them. But their main problem at the moment is that they don't have any housing. So that's our main focus for these guys.
And where would they traditionally live?
So traditionally they nested in high up trees, but then they started to, with obviously humans building and as humans progressed, they started to nest up in the high parts of buildings. So they'll nest in like the old crooks and different crannies in the buildings. So they nest now in these nest boxes that have been introduced in recent years. So that's what we're advocating for. We want more people to have nest boxes in their houses so that the swifts can live in them.
Okay, and where can you purchase those?
You can buy them on quickcrop.ie. So they're the suppliers for Ireland. You can get them on other websites too, but that's the one that we've looked at ourselves. And if you're in Northern Ireland, there's another website for that. I can't think of the name right now, but if you just look it up, you'll get it.
What age were you guys when you started this? How long has this project taken you to get to this point?
So we started this project back in first year about. So it's taken us 4-5 years now. So it's definitely a long, long project.
And has it been worth it?
Oh, yeah, very worth it.
Okay.
Yeah, it was just great to see the behaviour and the birds themselves.
I know that you saw them grow from egg all the way up to fleeing the nest. Did you end up feeling a connection to the birds?
So we got to watch them from egg to all the way to fledging, so when they flew away. So we got to see them all growing up. So we named each of the birds as well. So we have all these funny little names for them. So we had like Scrambles for one of them, and we had Edward for another one, and then Emma named our other one Lil Doug because he was doing this little dance when he was hatching. So he came out like that, so we decided to name them all funny names.
That sounds really cool. What are you going to do with this in the future? Are you going to continue on?
We were planning on kind of continuing on with it. We were going to maybe look at the, because when we looked at the temperature, we only looked at like the overall temperature for the day, and obviously these guys feed hourly, so we were going to look at the maybe hourly temperature, because the weather's always changing in Ireland. Like one minute it's raining, the next minute it's like 20 degrees with sunshine. So we were thinking of looking at the hourly temperature against hourly feeds and seeing if we could get more accurate and finite results. We were also thinking of maybe using a AI to help us go through the videos, so that when the birds come into the nest in the video, part of the screen will go dark. So if we have an AI to help us go through it, it could pick up on the pixels when the screen goes dark, and it'll help us just cut down on time and stuff, because like each video is like 10 hours long. And as Luke said, we were there a while looking at over 2000 hours of footage.
Fantastic. So it sounds like there's lots you can continue to do. So can you tell me a small bit then about your process in the competition of BT Young Scientist? I know that you did really well. So what was it that you won?
So we won the Met Aaron Special Award for obviously using their weather data, and obviously Met Aaron's all about the weather. We also won, we came first in our category for a senior group project, and our category was the biological and ecological category up at BT.
Amazing. So you did so fantastically. So for people building new properties, how can they incorporate the bird boxes, the swift boxes, into their build?
So there's gable boxes, which can be put on older houses. So they're just put on the outside. But then for newer builds, if you're just building your house, you can actually inlay the box as a brick. So that means you can just place it down as a brick and it'll be seamlessly in the side of your house. So you barely even notice it until you see the little swifts flying in.
Can you just tell me a little bit about the swift itself? Is it similar to any other birds of our common birds here in Ireland?
Yeah, so the swift is a greyish brown colour and it's got this white bit on its chin. But then the house martin or swallow would have white all over their belly, and they'd have different colours. So the swift is different in looks wise, but then also it's a very fast bird. So it would fly 42 kilometres an hour. So it'd be very fast compared to the others. And you'd have you'd hear them screeching rather than chirping or making other noises like the others would. And also they're very clean birds, so they will only do their droppings in their nest. So any bird droppings you see around would be from other birds and not the swifts.
Okay, so they're kind of a welcome guest.
Yeah.
Okay.
They'd be a good housemate to have.
Absolutely. That's a good way of putting it. Guys, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to talk to you, and you certainly have an excellent, excellent future ahead of you. And so did the Swifts. Thanks to you.
Thank you.
And that was Emily Butler, Emma Sweeney and Luke Malloy of Ballinrobe Community School, who spoke with us of their project that won them the BT Young Scientist Award. Congratulations and thank you so much for being with us. We will now speak to Linda Huxley of Swift Conservation Mayo, who approached the students to get involved in the project in the first place. Linda, hope you're having a good morning.
I'm great. Thank you very much. And thanks for inviting me onto the call.
Thank you very much for joining us. So, Linda, we were obviously speaking with the wonderful students from Ballinrobe Community School and the incredible work that they have done to encourage swift conservation here in the west of Ireland. So I know that you approached them to get involved in the project. And what encouraged you to do that?
We have links with ATU Mayo Campus in Castlebar, and we have a long-term project there since 2012. We record swift breeding behaviour 24/7 during the breeding season, and we had a student who was analysing videos, doing a master's project, and we thought this would be excellent to have the Ballinrobe Community School involved, where they could look at specifically at a nest of swifts where there were three chicks, that they could look at the breeding behaviour of that.
How important is it to get young people involved in this early?
It's extremely important because most people don't even notice swifts. They're almost like they're hidden in our community in the summer. And once you alert people to the amazing life of the swift, they become absolutely captivated. You know, once you know the screaming call of a swift and you see them around our towns in the summer, you know, they're just absolutely amazing. When they're here, they're the fastest flying bird in Ireland. And they come here to breed. So they go to Africa for our winter because we don't have enough flies for them in the winter. But they breed here, so I consider this as home and the future of the species.
And what were the findings, especially here in County Mayo?
Well, the good news is that the west of Ireland is really suitable to swifts. We always go to Europe and we think, oh, there's lots of swifts here in Europe, and our summers here in Ireland are not as warm as the European summers. But what we do have in plentiful supply is midges, and swifts love midges. Everyone will be pleased to hear that. So swifts will feed their chicks a ball of midges, around 500 to 800 midges per what we call a bolus. It's a ball of mashed up midges, and they feed that to their young. So what we have found, and what their project found, is by analysing all the feeding frequency of all the chicks, was that they can get adequate food here in Ireland. So even if we've got dull or windy weather, that's not an issue. The weather in Ireland is really suitable for swifts.
I know the student explained to us, they were telling us that you can get the swift boxes for your home, you can build them into a new build, and you can also apply them to an older build. So am I right in saying then that by maybe putting up these boxes, we could even, you know, notice maybe a reduction of midges around our homes here in the west of Ireland? Because that would be music to everybody's ears, I think.
Yes. Yeah, they call it an ecosystem service, but absolutely. The more swifts we have, the more, you know, or the fewer midges we'll have bothering us, because the swifts will be hoovering up the midges around our homes. And it's the same with the swallows, actually. The swallows that people will know, you know, from their barns and sheds, swallows eat flies. And when you've got the swallows here, that reduces the fly numbers that would annoy us.
That's pretty good news, I think. A lot of people will be very, very happy to hear that. What do you guys at Swift Conservation Ireland, what do you do?
Well, I'm actually based in Castlebar in County Mayo, and that's where all the conservation work started for me. And I initially set up Swift Conservation Mayo. So my efforts really are concentrated in Mayo, and I'm totally voluntary. So we've been really, along with other volunteers, we've been looking to find funds to set up nestbox projects for initially externally fitted to buildings, as you mentioned, you know, people can fit them to their houses. And then I started working with schools and public buildings, so Mayo County Council, when they were building new buildings, could we actually build nest bricks for swifts into the walls of these new public buildings. And the very first building in Ireland to have swift boxes incorporated in the walls was the Westport Town Hall. And we now have, we've 19 projects in County Mayo where we've actually built bricks into the walls of the new buildings. And that would include the Loch Lanner Swimming Pool, the Mary Robinson Centre, the fire station in Crossmolina. And the good news is that we actually have a recovering breeding population of swifts in County Mayo. So we have a successful formula that we're trying to share with other counties around the country.
That is really good news. And it's just as a legacy to all the fantastic work that's going on. So we know how, the students got so involved in Ballinrobe and they did it so extremely well. They got their BT Young Scientist Awards mm-hmm. out of it. And what is next for the Swift? Because we're working and we're doing this work. How do we think the future of the Swift is looking?
Well, if we, there are mainly two important things for swifts when they're in Ireland. One is that we have the insect food. So, a reduction in use of pesticides is very important because, having birds hoovering up insects rather than, spraying pesticides and insecticides is really good, good news for the birds. But also providing those nest boxes, which will provide long-term secure homes for generations of swifts to come. So if anybody goes along to the Loch Lanner Leisure Centre between now and middle of August, they will see what we call screaming parties of swifts, because we have 19 pairs of swifts breeding in that building now. So that is a fine example of what we continue to do throughout Mayo. It's a success story. So we just need to provide the food and provide the nesting compartments for them.
Linda, when I was speaking with the students from Ballinrobe Community School, I asked them if there was any questions that they'd still like to present to an expert. This is what Luke had to say. So I wonder, would you be able to provide us with an answer for this?
I'd definitely ask an expert how they know where to migrate, because it's very interesting to see how they go down to Africa, but most importantly, how they know where they're going.
Yeah, it's absolutely another amazing thing, really. They go, it's about 20,000 kilometres, the journey that they make. And what's amazing is they don't touch down at all in Africa. The only time that the swift will land is at its nest site. So when a chick fledges from one of our nest sites here in Mayo, it will be on its own. It will go all the way down to Africa and it will come back again. And you'd wonder how, as a bird leaving a nest site on its own and it's going to travel without its parents, how does it know? Well, it's using the stars, the magnetic field, the wind currents. So all of these natural weather systems that we have are really important to migratory birds. And they will also use geographical points like, mountains like Croagh-Patrick would be, a good indicator for a bird when it's reached Westport. So having our climate also remaining stable is very important. So the jet stream moving does affect migratory birds. So when they're flying at night, because don't forget they'll be flying 24/7, they will be using the stars to navigate. So we need also to ensure that we don't have light pollution. And we're also lucky in Mayo having the Mayo dark skies, because light pollution actually affects what the birds can see at night, so we have to really bear all of these things in mind. But their migration is absolutely amazing.
Absolutely. It's fascinating. So it just shows that every choice we make in terms of our climate is impacting every species on the planet. Would you say that is certainly the case for the swift?
I would. Yeah, I'd say it for all bird species, all migratory bird species. It's really important. And one thing that I feel is going to be quite significant for the swift is that they migrate through southern Spain. And there are big colonies of swifts in Spain and Portugal and so on. So the young swifts, the ones that are looking for a place to breed, will be travelling up from Africa, and as they travel, they'll be assessing locations. As the swifts come on their migratory journey, those young birds that are 1 and 2 year old that don't yet have their own home, they will be assessing where other swifts live. But Southern Europe is becoming very, very hot. You'll probably have seen in the news, you know, 40 degree temperatures in parts of Spain. And that means it's becoming a bit unbearable for breeding swifts, whereas our climate is very unlikely to reach those temperatures. So even if we get a bit hotter and we get, you know, kind of warmer summers, it's actually going to be in the swift's favour. So I think we will become very important for the long term security of swifts. There was a fossil found in Germany that of a swift 49 million years old. Now, I don't think we want to lose the swift in our lifetimes. You know, this bird has been around a long time.
And I suppose it brings it back again to the importance of getting the young people involved and having them aware of that, because I know our students here in Ballinrobe have been tackling this project for, they were saying, four-ish years. So they grew up with this project. So I suppose this is something that will stay with them forever. Is it something that you would encourage, not necessarily just swift conservation, but all different strains of environmental protection? Is it something that you would encourage yourself to get involved in at a young age?
Oh, absolutely. Because I think many people have lost connection with nature. And yet we live on the planet with nature surrounding us, and we cannot survive without it. You know, we need bees to pollinate our plants, the food plants that we are going to eat. So having a healthy natural environment is really important to our survival as much as it is to the survival of all the birds and, you know, other insects and butterflies and so on. So I would encourage anyone that's interested in swifts, they can contact me at swiftconservationisland@gmail.com. I have a lovely awareness booklet, if they're here in the summer, they can go into the Linen Hall in Castlebar and they can see the swifts on the television monitors there. They have the breeding swifts from the Linen Hall are actually, you can see on television monitors in the foyer. But also they have copies of the booklet, We Are Swifts, We Are in Trouble, and it gives you information about the amazing life of the swift and how everybody can help swifts.
Fantastic. Well, that is such a great resource for people to know about, and I'm sure there'll be lots of people heading into the Linen Hall for a look around. Linda Huxley, thank you so very much for joining us and raising a bit of awareness on the state of the swift. Up next on the show, we're being joined by Owen Warner, naturalist and wildlife documentary presenter, to share his thoughts on conservation. Owen, thank you very much for being with us this morning.
You're very welcome. Thank you for asking me.
Of course. Owen, so you're a naturalist. Can you explain to our listeners what that means and what it entails?
That's a very good question. It's, I suppose, someone who is, in my own case, just completely besotted with the natural world. And I've had an interest in it since a very young age. So I've never learned to become a naturalist. It's something that has always been in me. I've been wired that way, I suppose. And I never expected to kind of to end up working in that field, but here I am. So it's a real privilege to be a part of it and to feel that you're helping it in some way, because it's over the years has given me so much. So it's great to feel that I'm giving something back.
Now that you're looking back, Owen, you've spent your life working towards conservation and making sure that our oceans are clean and that we're looking after our surroundings. How important is it for young people to become conscious and, I suppose, aware of conservation and aware of what they can do themselves?
Well, I think it's incredibly important, because at the end of the day, you know, we speak of the natural world and the human world as if they're two separate different things. But, you know, everything is interconnected. Everything is intermingled and interdependent. All the fresh air that we breathe, all the fresh water that we drink, all comes from nature. The food that we grow comes from nature. We can't have a healthy population, human population, without having a healthy planet. And that's just the way it is. We evolved to be here and we need to take care of it. In terms of, you know, for a lot of people, I think it seems immense that some of the issues that are there. We can be quite anxious of it. There's 8 billion of us on the planet, I think, at this stage, and people will often question, you know, what a difference can I make? But I think we can all make a huge difference in our own way. And I think it's, you know, it's one of those things that I think you have to kind of lead by example in your own life. And just the biggest thing for me is just to consider the other, to consider them more than human, the natural world. So in everything that we do, whether it's the food that we buy and eat, you know, consider how that's grown, how it's farmed, how, the impact that that has on nature. Consider the clothes that you buy, and you know, have they been, were they produced ethically? Are we just consuming lots and lots of stuff, getting loads of clothes for holidays on some websites from China, and then a lot of God knows where it happens after all that? So it's about buying a few pieces and wearing them out and fixing them and repairing them and so on, so that we're not consuming as much, because at the moment as a species we're consuming far more than our share. And at the end of the day, we are sharing this planet with all these other amazing beings, and we need to treat it that way, that we are sharing it. So I would say to anyone, it's about considering the other all the time. And if all of us did that, we would make a huge difference. All the problems that we have and the issues and challenges we have, they'd be solved overnight if everyone thought about the other, the more than human, than just thinking about themselves.
And on that note, recently we spoke with Fionnuala and Jonathan from Scoilnáisiún do Chorcaíoch in the beautiful Belmullet area. Fionnuala shared with us some information about the seashore safari project that they recently undertook. And Jonathan shared a story about how he recently came upon a loggerhead turtle. Here's what the students had to say.
So, Ranga Triog, Gaji Ranga Shea took part in a really exciting project called the Seashore Safari, which was organised by Leave No Trace Ireland and the Marine Institute. The aim of the project was to help us learn more about nature and wildlife that lives on our beaches and how we can help to protect them. We were amazed to discover how much life there is on our shores, right near us in our own homes. We learned about different types of animals and plants that live on our beach and how they can survive there. We also talked about the ways we can look after the coast and the sea creatures that live there by not littering and not disturbing their habitats. A man named Ed from the Marine Institute came to our school in January and again in February 2024. On his first visit, he showed us how to dissect a squid. We got to see all the parts inside a real common squid, and we learned an Irish squid, Cochinta, and learned how it works. On a second visit, we learned how to tell the difference between a male and female squid. It was really interesting. One of the best parts was learning about the squid's ink sac and how they squirt ink when they feel scared or are trying to escape from a predator. It creates a dark cloud in the water to confuse the other animal. We also learned how the ink sometimes can be used as natural dye, and that long ago, people even used squid ink for writing. We had so much fun during the Seashore Safari, and we learned loads about the beach marine animals and how to take care of our environment. Rangatree and Cahir also had a follow-up trip to the beach in Blacksod as part of this project. We were able to identify lots of the seaweed and marine life on the shore that day. When we were back at school, we made collages based on what we had seen, gathered and learned. It was one of our favourite projects and we'll never forget it.
One day I was walking with my family, just like we often do, when I spotted something strange on the sand. At first I thought it was just a rock, but when I got closer, I saw it was a turtle. He wasn't moving at all and looked like he might be dead. But when we realised he was alive, just barely. The turtle was very cold and weak. Later, I learned that he was a loggerhead turtle, a type that usually lives in warm tropical waters, not here in Ireland. He had been cold stunned, which means the water was too cold for him and his body sort of shut down. We carefully wrapped him in a towel to keep him warm and safe, and we called for help. Soon, he was taken to Galway Atlantiquaria, where they looked after him really well. They gave him a special care like fluids, warmth and rest. We named him Columbus because he had travelled such a long way and ended up far from home. After a while, Columbus started to get better. He even began swimming again. It made me so happy to know that I had saved a sea turtle. They told me that once he was fully healed and strong again, he'd be released back into the wild where he belongs. I still think about Columbus. I learned that marine animals like turtles need our help, and that even one small action like stopping to check a strange shape on the beach can make a really big difference.
When people spend time in nature, you tend to then you know, you become proud of it because it's your place as well, and then you want to protect it because we protect what we love. And we need people in nature to see the changes and challenges that are happening at a local level so that they can tell others about it, you know, tell your friends, tell your family, get on social media and tell them about these challenges. Because if people aren't aware of it, if they're not spending time in nature, then these changes won't happen. And that young man, if he wasn't aware of what this loggerhead turtle was, or if he wasn't taking that beach walk, you know, that turtle probably would have died. So it's a small thing, but it all helps.
Owen, I totally agree with you. Thank you very much for joining us. That is Owen Warner, naturalist and wildlife documentary presenter. That is our lot for this month's episode of Hours to Protect. Thank you very much for listening in to us here on Hours to Protect and the Tommy Maron Show, brought to you by Westport Estate. A massive thank you to all our guests who joined us on this month's episode. Listen in next month for more information on climate action and what local people are doing about it. Hours to Protect is brought to you by Midwest Radio, the IBI, and funded by Commissioner Mann with the television licence fee.